Okay, so this is the second lecture in chapter 16. It's the discovery of the structure of DNA. So does anyone know who this picture is up on the upper right? Anyone who has not read the notes yet? Who is this? Very famous, yeah. Rosalind Franklin. And what's that picture to the right of Rosalind Franklin? Anybody? Yeah. Right, it's the X-ray diffraction picture of DNA. And who are these two guys down here? Yeah, Watson and Crick. The guy on the far right is Watson. He's an American biologist, probably in his early 20s. And Crick's about 10 years older than he is. And he's on the left there, and he's a physicist. So they published, the structure of DNA was published in 1953, so pretty close after the Hershey-Chase experiment that we talked about yesterday. James Watson was an American biologist. Francis Crick was a British physicist. And the unsung hero of the whole story is Rosalind Franklin, who was the one who actually took the X-ray crystallography pictures of DNA that you see here to the right. And without those pictures, these two guys would have never figured out the structure of DNA. Now, to kind of set the stage for you regarding this discovery, there was a book that was published in the 1940s that really shifted the way biologists thought about life. And I think it, you know, had a lot of influence. I know that James Watson read this book, had a huge influence on him. The book is called What is Life by Erwin Schrödinger. Now, does that name Schrödinger ring a bell to anyone? Yeah. Okay. Schrödinger's cat. The cat in the box. Is the cat alive? Is the cat dead? You know? Yeah, it's both. So there's another, and so some of you may know that. Does anyone know anything else about Schrödinger? I'll give you a hint. Chemistry. Okay. Now think about it. You probably heard about him in chemistry, or you should have. If you didn't, shame on your chemistry teachers. 2 years, okay, too long ago. Okay, you guys remember learning about those orbitals, the P and the S and all those crazy orbitals? Schrödinger was the one he's a physicist who developed these equations, these wave equations that basically predicted what these would look like. Does that ring a bell to some of you? Okay, some of you. The rest of you are like blank, okay. Anyhow, super famous, he won the Nobel Prize. But, so he was really a physicist, but he went into this area and thought about biology, kind of a philosopher, and he was thinking, you know, what is life? And his view in this book was that there had been this view sort of that had come down, we're still hanging around the thoughts of biologists, that there's some vital force, some mysterious vital force that causes things to have life. And he kind of just put it out there and said, I don't think so. What I think life is just chemistry and physics. If you can understand the chemistry and physics all the way down, then you can understand life. And if we really want to understand life, we really need to understand the chemical molecules that make up life. And so this was a real kind of paradigm shift for some biologists and certainly influenced James Watson, because James Watson was actually born in America, you know, he's American, and he was actually an ornithologist. He loved birds. He studied birds. So he's really into birds. But I think he changed his mind when he read Erwin Schrödinger's book, What is Life? And he said, well, maybe I really should study molecules, the molecular basis of life. I'll get further that way. And so that's what changed his mind and, of course, led him to go out and, you know, ambitiously discover the structure of DNA. And he really was, I'm going to show you this, a clip, you know, 30-minute part of this movie in a minute. And you won't see this sort of the backstory, but the backstory is when Watson finished his PhD, and he was looking for another project, you know, sort of the next step in his career. He, you know, the Hershey-Chase experiment had sort of determined that DNA was was the molecule of life. And so he realized he wanted to be famous, basically. He said, you know, the best way to be famous is to go after the big fish. And the big fish, of course, is what is the structure of DNA, because that's going to really crack open what life is in terms of the molecular view. So what he did is he was down in Naples at a conference, and he saw some X-ray crystallography pictures that had been taken by Maurice Wilkins, who you'll see in the video, who ended up sort of working with Rosalind Franklin. And those X-ray crystallography pictures, you know, Watson realized, hey, if I if I can go where these pictures are, then I've got a chance of figuring out what DNA, the structure of DNA is. And so since all the work was going on at Cambridge, that's where he went. And he found pretty much the smartest guy in Cambridge, a guy by the name of Francis Crick, who was a physicist. And the deal with Francis Crick is he was working, I think, at the time on hemoglobin. And he really understood how to do X-ray crystallography. He understood the physics of it. And Watson realized if he could partner with this super smart guy, that his chances of success were greatly increased. And so Watson is a real opportunist, but he's a super smart opportunist. And he partnered with pretty much the smartest guy at Cambridge who could have helped him figure it out. And then, of course, they stole peeks of Rosalind Franklin's pictures, and that helped too. In the 1960s, he wrote a book called The Double Helix, which sort of chronicles this discovery. And it was an extremely controversial book because it's the first time ever that a scientist really sort of opens up to the world what goes on in the world of science. And it shocked a lot of people because people tended to think that science was this sort of dispassionate, non-political sort of discipline where objective truth is always, you know, prevails. And what Watson basically said is, you know, it's a bunch of egomaniacs who want to be famous and they'll do anything they can, you know, stealing people's photographs and ideas. And, you know, it's completely, there's a lot of humanness in science that people hadn't realized before. And he was very politically incorrect. It upset a lot of people. In fact, his opening line to the book is this: I have never seen Francis Crick in a modest mood. And of course, you know, Francis Crick didn't like that because, you know, it basically says, you know, Francis Crick is a sort of egomaniac, you know, super proud guy. You know, he had a reason to be. He's super, super smart, but he didn't really like to have the world know that. So, anyhow, and James Watson has continued to be that way to the point that last year he's been the president of Cold Spring Harbor's lab, which is in New York, for like 20 or 30 years. And he made some sort of disparaging, what would almost be considered racist remarks on a book tour last fall, and they stripped him of his presidentship at Cold Spring Harbor. So he gets himself in trouble. Okay, so what led them to this? Well, one of the things that led them was Erwin Chargaff came up with this rule, and his rule was really interesting. He studied the ratio of, you know, ATCs and Gs in different organisms, and he basically found that regardless of what organism you look in, the amount of A and T is about equal, and the amount of G and C is about equal. And so that was an important piece of data. He didn't know what it meant, so he wasn't able to use it, but Watson was able to use it because it helped Watson kind of figure out the base pairing that happened in DNA. Of course, the other important thing was Rosalind Franklin's X-ray photographs. And just to kind of give you a quick view of how this works, they crystallized a sample of DNA, which is right here. They then send X-rays through that DNA sample. And what happens, X-rays are a wave. Whenever you send a wave through a very narrow space, which basically the molecules provide that narrow space, it causes the wave to bend. And then they'll bend in different directions and different places. And then when different waves, their crests or troughs arrive at the same place on the photographic film, you'll get what's called constructive interference, and you'll get a dot. And then there will be places where waves will, what we call destructively interfere. You'll get a crest with a trough, and then you won't see anything. So you get this pattern of light, dark, light, dark. And if you're really smart and you understand the physics of how all this works, which is what Francis Crick was great at, then you can look at the photograph and you can back out and say, oh, this is what the structure must be. So it's very complicated, very technical physics type work. But with someone like Francis Crick, you can do this. And then, of course, we know about the nitrogenous bases. The nitrogenous bases are, we've learned about these before, the pyrimidines are thymine and cytosine, the purines are adenine and guanine, and if you look over there on the right, you'll see that the pyrimidines are the ones that are, they have a single ring, and then the pyrimidines are the ones with, the purines are the ones with the single, no, the pyrim, excuse me, pyrimidines are the single ring, and the purines are the double ring structures. So, and you remember my little mnemonic for remember this, remembering this, purines are pure and not cut. So that's kind of the way to remember it. Yeah. They didn't know. They knew, well, they didn't know anything about messenger RNA, so all they knew is these. Yeah. RNA was discovered later, or the structure was discovered later. And of course, hydrogen bonding is what holds them together. Now, if you actually look at the DNA structure, what's really cool is that you can see here up on my slide that you get a sugar phosphate backbone. There's a sugar phosphate, sugar phosphate, sugar phosphate. And if you remember how we number the carbons, the carbon that's attached to the nitrogenous base is carbon 1. Then we have carbon 2. There's carbon 3. There's carbon 4 and there's carbon 5. And so what you get is what we call 3 to 5 linking or 5 to 3 linking, depending on which way you're looking at it, phosphate, carbon. And then you've got a nitrogenous base attached to the sugar. And then you got the same thing going on over here. Then the hydrogen's attached in the middle. Now, the interesting thing that a lot of students don't realize, but I hope you will realize by looking at this picture, and this confused Watson and Crick for a while, it turns out that the DNA does not run parallel to one another. It runs anti-parallel. So if you look here, you'll see that one, and the way to see it is if you look on the left-hand strand, you'll see that the O, the oxygen in the sugar, is on the top. But if you look over here, it's on the bottom. So you can see that it's running, they're running anti-parallel. And when they made that breakthrough, they were able to get the, that was one of the big breakthroughs that allowed them to finally get the structure of DNA. Pretty cool. Okay? So that's it for the lecture. Now we're going to watch 30 minutes of The Race for the Double Helix.